Yo, MuggleCast listeners, I have a deal for you. Get reliable, secure web hosting without the long-term contract. GoDaddy's hosting plans are bigger and better than ever, with 99% uptime, free 24/7 support, and no annual commitment. Best of all, plans start at $3.99 a month. Plus, as a listener of MuggleCast, enter code HARRY, that's H-A-R-R-Y, when you check out, and save an additional $5 off of any order of $30 or more. Some restrictions apply. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Because we finally have a podcaster from Australia this week, this is MuggleCast episode 74 for January 28th, 2007.
Welcome back to MuggleCast. I'm Rubius Hagrid, keeper of games and keys at Hogwarts.
Oh boy, did we get a lot of feedback about that last week?
And 50 other reasons not to listen to MuggleCast. Yeah.
Actually, I'm Ben Shane, by the way. I was doing the wonderful Hagrid impression. I'm sorry, okay? I didn't mean to offend anybody. It was in good fun. I'd done the joke before. I wasn't making fun of Robbie Coltrane's weight by saying that there's Burger King and Dairy Queen and all these places on set. I wasn't trying to make fun of a British accent. I was just having a good time.
I think what upset most people who did complain, I think we got more good feedback than we did bad, to be completely honest with you.
Really?
But yeah, I really think so. What most people were upset about was that we hyped it up a week beforehand. So we won't be doing that again for things such as a Rubius Hagrid interview. But although we did cut down on some hyping that we had planned.
Well, I thought we tried to make it really obvious. If you go back and listen to that show, when we said that this is a huge interview, the biggest person to ever be on a Harry Potter podcast.
It was very sarcastic.
So we're sorry. If you got punked. We're sorry for punking you.
Now that we got that out of the way, though, welcome back, everyone, to another edition of MuggleCast. We got a great show for everyone. More J.K. Rowling quotes to discuss, and also a little discussion on death. It's going to be a little sad. But I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Ben Shane.
I'm Kevin Steck.
I am Eric Skull.
And I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
Mike Tan, the MuggleCast anchor newsman, is standing by in the MuggleCast News Center with the past week's top Harry Potter news stories. Micah.
A few months ago, Dan Radcliffe and Warwick Davis' guest appearance on the British television series Extra ran on UK TV. HBO will be airing this episode for the first time in the United States tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern. And we previously informed you that 2006 was Britain's best recorded year for filming, with a total of £840 million being spent. However, new figures suggest little of this is being used in Scotland. Although Harry Potter is predominantly set in Scotland, only small portions of the film are actually shot there. Just $100,000 of Order of the Phoenix's $150 million budget were used. Two pallets containing 3,000 copies of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them and Quidditch Through the Ages have been stolen. The books, which were due to be recycled, were taken from the recycling company at Port Talbot's docks in the UK. The Guardian on Saturday wrote about the obstacles faced by Harry Potter translators, such as the invented words, prophecies, rhymes, and general wordplay. The article also notes translators come under pressure in countries where the quality of second language English is high, causing many to buy the original version instead. The BBC has announced that they will be launching a new reality series later this year in search of a real Harry Potter. The show will follow young students studying magic at a boarding school as they face off, showing their skills at varying card tricks and illusions. Someone will leave the show each week until only one remains and becomes the Sorcerer's Apprentice. That is Laura Mallory's biggest nightmare. And speaking of Laura Mallory, For the first time since she embarked on a relentless campaign to remove Potter from Gwinnett County school libraries in August of 2005, Laura Mallory has spoken out in detail about her motives. In a new article found in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, she slams myths such as this is a one-woman fight and witchcraft is just harmless fantasy. She writes that young children have been indoctrinated into witchcraft, causing their lives to be ruined. In response to the question, do you believe Harry Potter promotes Wicca? JKR replied back in a 2001 interview with this. She says, "That's not true. Not once has a child come up to me and said, 'Due to you, I've decided to devote my life to the occult.' People underestimate children so hugely. They know it's fiction. When people are arguing from that kind of standpoint, I don't think reason works tremendously well. But I would be surprised if some of them hadn't read the books at all." What a coincidence. Laura Mallory hasn't read the books. Joe went on to say, "Witches and wizards are a huge part of children's literature. It'll never go away. 100 years, 200 years time, there'll be another kind of wizard story." And if you've got something to say, you can now contact Mrs. Mallory at her website, the link provided on MuggleNet.com. That's all the news for this January 28th, 2007 edition of MuggleCast. Back to the show.
Okay, thank you, Micah.
Yep.
Eric, you are podcasting this week from a new location. You might be the first podcaster.
From Sunday. He's podcasting from Sunday.
From Sunday, yeah.
From the future.
Podcasting from the future, yeah.
From the near future, actually, yes.
Eric, where are you?
I am in New Zealand.
Ooh.
Ooh.
You're going to be studying in England, or New Zealand.
New Zealand, yes. Well, it's kind of close. New Zealand's a Commonwealth country, which means...
How long are you going to be there?
Well... probably.
I mean, like grand total, not just.
Yeah, I would say for the Bachelor of Arts, which I'm going for at Victoria University here in the capital city of New Zealand, Wellington, 3 years Bachelor of Arts. Yeah,
3 years.
Now
wow.
Everyone can stalk you.
3 years. So,
yeah,
it's true. They can go on to vuw.ac.nz and you know see where I'm going.
Now, is this like a public university?
It's public.
Now, are degrees international if you get a Bachelor of Arts there? Is it still going to apply in the U.S.?
Yeah, it is. But it's for, there are under 10 universities in New Zealand for, you know, tertiary education, which is like colleges, you know, unis. And this is a very large one. They get international students from a lot of Asia, actually, and America and stuff. So it's actually a big school. Very international, very cool. I like it a lot. It's very beautiful, too.
So how far ahead in time are you, time zone-wise? Was it, like 18 hours?
18 hours, yeah, I think so. Yeah, right now it's 18 hours. It might switch, go
from
back
East
to
Coast,
17.
Anyway.
Yeah, from the East Coast, if you subtract, 6 hours, and then add a day from Eastern Standard Time, that's what time it is in New Zealand.
Oh, okay. Very cool. So it's 9 a.m. there. It's 3:30 here.
That's
correct.
Well,
it's 9:30 there.
So. It's 9:30, yeah.
Well, good morning to you. Top of the morning to you.
Oh, well, thank you, Andrew. Anyway, I won't talk about it anymore. I know we got a show to get to, but I did want to mention one thing that I find cool, that it's a trend I just want to start Americans doing. So, like, when I come back in 3 years for good, people do it everywhere. When they give a web address here, right, they have the you know web addresses, typically the URL begins with www. Well, actually here, if they're giving a web address, they just say www.
That's what I always say.
So, you know, if we promote MuggleNet MuggleCast, we should say www.mugglenet.com. And that sounds so much cooler, I think, than saying
www.
Well, W cubed.
Yeah, or
W. Well, okay. What I'm saying is there's a range. There's a whole range, and it's inspired me to give web addresses differently. So I don't know. Maybe people find that cool. People at
home. I say dub sometimes. Actually,
no, you don't.
Really?
Yeah, I do. Not to you. I have. I used to. I think.
But yeah, it is common practice, and they have the letter W. But you know, when they're giving it a web address, it makes it cooler and faster. So, thought I'd mention that.
Neato. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting though? We actually got an email this week asking for somebody to be on our show. That podcast from Australia, since I know there's a lot of listeners out there, so we're glad we can accommodate you.
There you go.
Yes, you sent me here. You paid for my college just to please the Australians.
The fans, yeah.
No, but I people at home, do not worry. People in America, I am coming to prophecy and stuff.
Oh, so none of that. I'm starting to get scared.
Oh, yeah, you guys were...
I'm freaking
well,
too.
No, I'll still be doing that. And if there's a Book 7 release in the next 3 years, which is...
imminent.
You know, maybe possible. Then we'll be, what are we doing that in England? Book release?
We haven't decided yet.
Yeah. A few years ago, Jamie Emerson and I said we'd do one in England. So,
well, I know. Since what you said 3 years ago, you know, was binding.
Yeah. But anyway.
All right, guys.
You know, speaking of England, I accidentally insulted, without meaning to, insulted England and Canada last week. I said something about those
countries. You insulted
them. I did. I said that they were stupid countries, but... what I forgot to keep in was the part where I was saying I was just kidding, and I really was. I did not mean anything by it. So, but anyone who was offended by that week, by that last week, I wholeheartedly apologize.
We're
I really
just dumb
don't
Americans.
Think they're stupid countries.
We're just
and
dumb
don't
Americans.
Take, yeah, and I'm sarcastic all the time. Don't take anything that I say seriously. We'd like to remind everyone that we are going to be at Prophecy. Full podcast details haven't been worked out yet, but we'll get you guys those as soon as possible. It'll probably be released in the form of a leaky mug. And also, there's the Decade of Enchantment Ball, and we wanted to remind everyone that tickets are sold out. However, on the website and to us, they said that they are looking into selling more tickets at a later date. So if you were hoping to go to the Yule Ball and you haven't signed up for Prophecy yet...
your dreams aren't dead yet.
Yeah, Kevin actually missed out. He registered a little too late, so we're going to try to get him in if he wants to.
I'll break it.
So, folks, Kevin Steck is looking for a date, so... Mm.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, you're bringing Andrew, right, Ben? Yeah, actually, no, I heard that you and Jamie and Ben were going in a threesome.
That's my plan. I hope those other two are still sticking with it.
Yeah.
Ben, you didn't find a date yet, right?
Dude, I have so many fangirls, man. They just flock all over me.
Also, in Lightning 2007, Ben, Jamie, Mike, and I will be there mid-July. Actually, the release date of the Order of the Phoenix film will be there doing a live podcast. I was actually there yesterday meeting with Vicky, who's running in Lightning 2007. And it's actually pretty cool, the place we're going to be doing the podcast from. It's like this theater-style old... it looks like an old theater, old style theater. It's actually really cool. And also the place where they're having the Great Feast is actually, it looks like the Great Hall. It actually looks just like the Great Hall with the tall windows and everything. So it's pretty cool. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Something else interesting. Andrew and I discussed this a few days ago. Since that's the day the movie comes out, we were thinking perhaps after we get done doing the workshop, doing the podcast, maybe we could go see the movie with all of you. I mean, there's nothing set in stone, but...
Well, no, they're having a movie premiere there.
Are they really? Oh, I just made this stuff up.
That's pretty cool.
We hadn't talked about that.
I know, I was going to say. yeah, so they're going to have a movie premiere there, so we'll go to that. So, if anyone is interested, we encourage you to visit enlightening2007.org for more information. It's going to be a great event, and there's going to be lots of Harry Potter discussion going on. There's also going to be a workshop hosted by Ben, Jamie, and I about how to create your own podcast. We have 30 people signed up for that right now, so we look forward to meeting all of them. And we're going to give you a behind-the-scenes look at how we make MuggleCast, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
What's the website?
enlightening2007.org. At the University of Pennsylvania. And there's actually photos on my Flickr. I'm not going to link to them, but if anyone wants to check those out, andrewsims.com. Anyway, we have a few emails now to get to this week, and then we'll get on to our main discussion. Micah, you want to read the first one?
Sure. The first one's from Sarah15 from Tennessee. She's writing in about Bertha Jorkin. She says, in episode 73, you said that Bertha went missing in Romania. She actually went missing in Albania. That's where Voldemort's hiding place was before he had a body. I hope you have a very hairy day.
Sorry. Sarah. Thanks for clearing that up for us, Sarah.
All right, the next one. Savannah15 from Ellicott City, Maryland writes about Crumb's nationality. Hey, MuggleCasters, I couldn't help but noticing that in MuggleCast episode 73, you kept saying that Crumb was Romanian, but he is part of the Bulgarian Quidditch team, making me think that he is the most likely Bulgarian. Just wanted to point this out. I love your show. Keep up the good work. So
right,
I guess Romania is just everything.
You guys have struck gold. Romania is everything, but this time it actually shares a border with Bulgaria, so you guys are in luck.
So sorry about that. We're just in love with Romania, I guess.
We were thinking on our feet with that discussion. We had to, we weren't on top of our Bulgarian game, if you know what I'm saying.
Janelle Haney writes from San Francisco Bay, California, about episode 73, Finding the Horcruxes per book. Hello, first of all, I'd like to express my deep appreciation for you all. It is your podcast that keeps me sane during my long commute to school on BART. On the topic of finding a Horcrux in each book, has anyone brought up the short scene in Sorcerer's Stone in which Harry first walks into Ollivander's, in which a single wand lay on the faded purple cushion in the dusty window, page 82 of the U.S. hardback? Thank you for everything.
Very interesting.
And by the way, a lot of people sent this in, just assuming that's Ravenclaw's wand.
That's very interesting. I kind of like that. But why would it be Ravenclaw's?
Because you need something from Ravenclaw, right, Micah?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know, maybe just to play devil's advocate, maybe it was just a wand that they were featuring, like, on sale now, hey.
Yeah, but, well, J.K. Rowling doesn't really, when she draws attention to something like that, you know what I mean? It's not, it's usually, it's significant. She's not going to draw attention to a special wand on sale, I don't think.
That's true.
If you think of the main purpose of wands as being academic, kind of, as in furthering your study of magic and stuff like that, it would be really cool if Ollivander had you know, Ravenclaw's wand, and if that were the one on display. That would just kind of be cool, because, you know, people might not know it, and I'm sure he probably wouldn't, you know, put a plaque saying Ravenclaw's wand just in case people know about Horcruxes or are looking for it, but, you know, it would be kind of cool if that turned out to be a Horcrux. But
very interesting. Thank you, Janelle.
Mitch from Orange County writes about the Horcruxes again. I sent you a voicemail earlier, but I wanted to go into more detail than I could in a 30-second message. J.K. Rowling has said many times that Dumbledore is never far off from the mark. I think that means we can take 95% of what he has as fact and true. I therefore extend this to his thought on the Horcruxes. Dumbledore says that Voldemort split his soul into 7 parts. It is logical to presume that the parts are as follows. 1, the diary. 2, the ring. 3, the locket. 4, Nagini. 5, unknown. 6, unknown. And 7th is still in Voldemort as he needs to live. Numbers 1, 2, and 7 are all gone. Number 1 was destroyed by Harry. Number 2 was destroyed by Albus. Number 7 was destroyed the night Harry tried to kill Voldemort. That leaves 4 Horcruxes remaining. That's what I mean. Voldemort tried to kill Harry. That leaves 4 Horcruxes remaining. The locket, Nagini, and 2 unknowns. Why make a Horcrux so that can be used to return to life? We know that he has indeed returned. Wouldn't this have required him to use one of the Horcruxes? I therefore think that only 3 remain. That would be 1, the locket at Grimmauld Place, 2, Nagini, and 3, an unknown item. Albus has told Harry about Nagini. I think he'll learn about the locket from Creature. That means there's only 1 left for him to figure out. What do you all think about this? I really hope you use this on your show. This is something that's been festering in my mind ever since Half-Blood Prince came out, and I don't recall you ever looking at it from this angle. Thanks, and I look forward to hearing your answer. Mitch. Micah, what do you think about all the Horcruxes? Do you think that there's only 1 unknown, or are there 2 unknowns?
I mean, I would only bank on the ones that we know 100%, like the diary, the ring, the locket, and then the cup, we know for sure. I don't see him mentioning that in there at all, did he?
No, he didn't.
No.
When he lists them, and, I mean, Dumbledore seemed pretty certain, and we had that flashback scene with Hepzibah Smith, so I just think that what he's trying to get at is maybe there's one that's already been used that we don't know about, going back to Goblet of Fire when he was
Well, I think
reborn.
He's talking about, yeah, that one, that he had to use that one.
Because how does he come back to life without latching onto one of his Horcruxes? So was something used that we don't know about, that we didn't pay any attention to?
Well, would he have had to use another Horcrux to come back to life? I mean, I was under the impression that that was the bit of soul that was, you know, that was without a body for the longest time, was in Quirrell, and then later got, you know, this little crumpled baby body. The spell, or the potion they brewed with Wormtail involving the bones of the father, blood of a servant, and, you know, hand of a servant giving willing to, whatever it was. I just got the impression that that was just, you know, the spell that, or the potion that gave him a full corporal body, like a full, like, that's what did it. I don't think there was a Horcrux involved. I think that potion was just strong enough.
Well, he still has to have a bit of soul, though.
Like, what do you mean?
Because when Harry killed, when the curse rebounded and he got killed that night, that piece of soul was gone, right?
No, it wasn't gone. That piece of soul became the Voldemort that was in exile for 10, 13 years.
Otherwise, then Voldemort couldn't be killed, period.
Right. Yeah, Ben is right.
He would have had to use another piece of soul.
Yeah, the only reason why he was still alive is because other pieces of soul were holding him to...
Well, no, the fact that he had 6 or 7 Horcruxes at that time was enough to keep the soul that was in his body alive. I don't think the soul that was in his body ever died.
Why wouldn't it?
Because that part of Voldemort was the Voldemort that was not in any other Horcrux. That part of Voldemort, you know, are you saying that the minute he was killed by the cursor banding, another piece of Voldemort's soul popped out of the Hepzibah Smith's cup and just flew around for 10 years in Albania?
What's so out there about that?
Well, no, I was under the impression that, I mean, that's it. I was just under the impression that the part in Voldemort's body was the one that was, you know.
I just don't know how he could survive. I mean, if the killing curse can't destroy him.
Well, that's the whole point. Why would he
even make... The killing curse can't do it, but the only reason he survived was because of the Horcruxes.
Well, the existence of the Horcruxes. It doesn't say anything about he had to revert to the Horcruxes to do it.
Well, then what point was there to split your soul?
Because if you split it in 7 equal parts, you have something really cool going for you.
Yeah, but you have to use those pieces of soul if you die.
Right, but having the pieces of soul as a backup or something, I mean, we don't know, because Voldemort, we don't know if he achieved the number 7. We don't know if having them, because the whole point you got to remember about Horcruxes, about splitting your soul, is to keep them safe. And also ensure, like, immortality. So if you have a certain... I mean, it makes sense both ways, but it just makes sense to me that he didn't die that night. He lost his body and became this shriveled up... He doesn't even know what he was. I mean, if you read the graveyard scene in Book 4, he talks all about this. He was less than nothing, but he was still alive. He was just without a body.
Micah, what do you think?
Just going off of what Eric said, I think his soul left his body that night and it sort of wandered around. But my point with Goblet of Fire was that I thought no spell, no potion could sort of reawaken the dead, but I guess Voldemort wasn't really dead in that sense.
No, he wasn't dead at all.
I'm just having a hard time believing that the potion was what brought him back to life. I thought in order for him to come back to life, he would need to... reattached to one of his Horcruxes.
He wasn't dead, and the other thing too is the Horcruxes are just pieces of soul. Horcruxes have nothing to do with the body. He needed a body, and somehow he had gotten that little, you know, baby's crumbled up, you know, carcass type body. But he was alive at the time when Wormtail put him into the tub. He just needed. I mean, he was alive. He just had a little bit of a body, and he needed a better body. So he turned his. You know, he created his body. That's what that ceremony was for. That potion was for the blood of his or the bones of his father, so that he would get his own genes. Structure back into it, and then Harry's the immunity to Harry's by using his blood, and then you know the thing of a servant. I think that was a dark spell to give him a body, but he was alive. It wasn't necessarily a thing that brought him back to life. It just gave him a full male Ralph Fiennes body, sexy body, Ralph Fiennes.
I agree with that.
If you want to look like Ralph Fiennes,
what the purpose of making the Horcruxes would be if. Those are the steps that he took to ensure his immortality. So he would have had to lost a piece of soul that night, otherwise it wouldn't make any sense for him to make the Horcruxes.
Well, no, it would, Ben, because if you were to do that again, if you were to try and kill Voldemort as he is now, the existence of the other Horcruxes would keep his soul alive. You would kill his body, but because he had until you got rid. Of all of the other Horcruxes, of all the little encapsulated pieces of soul.
But you'd have to use one of them, though. That's the thing. You'd have to use one of those Horcruxes.
Well, I kind of see what you're saying, but I just don't...
Like that piece of soul would no longer... That's the one that he's using now. If that makes any sense.
I'm guessing what it is that in order to kill a Horcrux, you have to specifically do something to the Horcrux. So, in the case of the spell rebounding on Voldemort, because those steps weren't taken, that piece of the soul wasn't destroyed.
No. He wasn't... Once you use the Horcrux... Okay, the Horcrux A Horcrux is an inanimate object, okay? It could be my shoe, okay? There wasn't a shoe that needed to be destroyed inside Voldemort. Voldemort was already used that Horcrux.
Yeah, but I don't think...
You mean he already had a piece of soul in him. You didn't have to take any steps to destroy the soul. Destroying the soul is itself, but like destroying a Horcrux as an inanimate object is different than destroying a human being's soul. A soul that's actually possessing a person as opposed to a piece of soul that's possessing my shoe.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, but I don't... What I'm saying is I don't think that they're used like you're thinking. I don't think it's sort of like a get-out-of-jail-free card where, you know, you die once and you have to give, you know...
They have to throw in the card because then you could just try and kill Voldemort 7 times and...
Exactly.
And then he would die.
No, you wouldn't. No, because yeah,
because every time he died, he would have to use a Horcrux, and then there would be none left, and he would die.
But you couldn't kill him 7 times.
Well, you could cast Avada Kedavra in his general direction.
Okay, you'd have to use a Horcrux, otherwise it wouldn't make any sense whatsoever. Fans, write in and agree with me here, because I don't think I think I'm making sense.
Yeah, but I think if you read what they say about Horcruxes, the Horcrux bound him to the earth. Like, that's the only thing holding him. But they're not used up.
That's the only
when
thing
he dies. They're still there. They're just holding him there.
Are you saying Voldemort has a huge flaw in his plan? Are you saying that if you just killed him 7 times, he'd die?
That's what Ben
Ben's trail of logic. Yeah, that's what, if you follow the logic, that's what happens. Because if you use up a Horcrux every time you're killed, then Voldemort only, you know, somebody has to cast Avada Kedavra and aim very well 7 times for him to die. And that's a little bit easier than going around searching for these Horcruxes about Voldemort's past and the history of Hogwarts.
No, but it's not
crap.
As easy as just killing him 7 times, though.
That's no, admittedly, but that would be all you'd have to do. So why is Dumbledore sending Harry on this whole find the Horcruxes first thing? So you only have to kill him once, or
yeah, absolutely. Yes. Why else?
Well,
it would take him much longer to kill him 7 times to find him and kill him 7 times, because every time you kill him, he's going to go off somewhere else, right? And then you got to find him and over again.
Whereas Dumbledore could barely get through one of two of, I should say, because he did the ring, but the whole cave thing was just protection around one Horcrux.
Hold on a sec, let's clarify things here. We're arguing over whether or not
a Horcrux is used.
Okay, a Horcrux is actually, do you use the Horcruxes, or does the Horcruxes just allow him to stay on the Earth, basically, right?
Yeah, was the part of the Voldemort's soul that was in his body destroyed when he tried to kill Harry, or was it just thrown from his body? His body was destroyed when the house blew up, and his soul was the soul that was in Albania for 13 years, finding Bertha Jorkins and all sorts of stuff. And the soul that came back to Hogwarts in the back of Quirrell's head.
Well, should we just leave it at this and then ask the fans what they think?
Yeah, because I think it's all futile. Right.
And then I'm sure we'll
get proven
argue about
somewhere.
It more next week. Well, right, that too. So email your thoughts into mugglecast@staff.mugglenet.com. That concludes today's debate. Now we're going to move on to our main discussion this week. Does Voldemort deserve to die? And Ben, you put this one together for us.
Yeah. Well, see, throughout the books, the thing that Voldemort fears most is death. Like, you hear him talking about, there's nothing worse than death, Dumbledore, and all those things. So,
Is that your Voldemort impression?
Well, I think we'll have interviewed Voldemort next week. The scariest person on a Harry Potter podcast. So, my question is, if Harry is given the opportunity... Should he give Voldemort what he fears most? Should he kill Voldemort?
Why not?
Well, Dumbledore says over and over again, tries to remind Tom Riddle, Voldemort, that there are things far worse than death. So, do you think that Voldemort is always going to operate? Do you think that it will always be that death is his greatest fear? Or do you think there will be things that he'll finally figure out that there are things worse than death?
I think he's lost too much to change his mind and actually go with what Dumbledore would think. I mean, what's he got to live for at this point? Killing Harry.
Yeah, but what do you think is worse than death?
Well, many people wasn't it even said on MuggleCast that he should just become a Muggle janitor and clean a bunch of toilets or something for of eternity?
I think I said this like way back, but I think you look at Harry and the life that he's lived, and to him, living that life may be worse than dying, because if he dies, he's reunited with everyone that he's really loved. His parents, Sirius, Dumbledore.
I would think losing his friends would be worse to him than death, because he knows what he has to do. He has to kill Voldemort, and he knows what kind of risk he's taking. But losing Ron or Hermione...
Right, but is there something worse than death for Voldemort?
I would think he would be implying the condition of Voldemort's soul, in the sense of, you know, when he dies, there's more than meets the eye. It's not just death. And what he's doing on Earth at the moment is destroying any chance of him ever, you know, going beyond death.
Well, I'm not only saying that, but for example, if Voldemort was able, had his magic taken away, would that be worse than him?
He would still be a troublemaker, though, is the other thing. I mean, the thing about Voldemort, he's so against dying. Yeah, I'd like to teach him a lesson, say, hey, you know, this is actually what's worse than death, being a muggle. But, you know, Voldemort's the kind of person where as long as he has arms and legs, he will, you know, create destruction. If that's an oxymoron, but he will be reckless and restless, and he will always, you know, Voldemort's the kind of person who has to die, because if you just turn him into, you know, unless you put him in the middle of a mountain or something for all eternity, you know, he's gonna find a way to get out. He does have to die.
Well, that's the thing. What would killing him really accomplish, though?
No more of him, not even in the most smallest fragment of soul. And no safety more, and peace. Only yeah. Safety and peace for you know, the whole wizarding world and
but
muggle
really
world.
That's true, though. That's, do you really think that's true?
No, I don't think that's true. I think there'll always be somebody.
For example, if we killed Osama bin Laden, wouldn't there still be hatred towards the U.S.?
Yeah, there's always someone to fill in their spot, yeah.
No, you're right. Evil will still be... Okay, I said safety and peace, not lack of evil. I mean, evil will always be there.
Well, the safety and peace implies lack of evil.
Oh, okay. But lack of... Voldemort is the biggest piece of evil we've got in the Harry Potter series. So we can assume he's the worst thing that's going on in the world right then and there in that reality.
When Voldemort thinks that death is the worst thing, is it the worst thing to happen to himself, or is it the worst thing to happen to anyone?
To him, especially,
but he also tells Dumbledore there's nothing worse than death. So
right,
okay.
So that's what I was going to say, though. Coming from Dumbledore, he believes personally that there are things worse than death, whereas Voldemort may not necessarily see it that way.
What do you think would be worse to Voldemort? Death of his Death Eaters or death
himself?
To
without
himself?
Doubt, yeah.
Himself, absolutely.
I mean, because if he loses his army,
he'll try to start over. I mean,
no. Well, remember. Dumbledore said Voldemort doesn't even have an army. I mean, technically he does, but Voldemort operates alone.
But he operates by fear. The only reason those people are with him is because they'll be killed.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is if his Death Eaters are gone, yeah, he'd be hurting a little bit as far as, you know, power or limit of power, you know, wrath. But Voldemort operates alone anyway. Voldemort does, you know, all of his secret plans and stuff are all his own to begin with, and it wouldn't be too much. He wouldn't be unable to function. You're not going to cripple Voldemort by killing his Death Eaters. You have to go after him.
And he doesn't put any value in his Death Eaters.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, he never truly appreciates them for what they are. So
or trusts them or likes them.
Exactly.
Or
so,
something else. Do you think that Harry could actually kill Voldemort? I mean, Harry seems to be a compassionate person. He can't perform an unforgivable curse. He knows that he saw how Voldemort grew up in the orphanage and things like that. And in Half-Blood Prince, Dumbledore actually asked Harry, "Are you feeling sorry for Tom Riddle?" Because of what happened to him. And, you know, there's always the emphasis of choices in the series, but Harry seems to know that if he was placed in those same circumstances, you know, could he have made similar choices? So, do you think that he would actually kill Voldemort?
Well, it's a good question, Ben. Because of the emphasis on choices, and then the whole prophecy thing dictates that he absolutely has no choice, that one has to kill the other. So it kind of like, you know, the whole introduction of the prophecy in Book 5 startled me because of that. It's like, okay, so he doesn't have a choice, or does he, or what?
But everyone agrees that he intends to right now, as it stands.
Yeah, he intends to. Yeah,
until he comes face to face. Ben, do you think that's when he might?
Yeah, that's when he might back out, really. I'm not saying, like,
I don't think he'll back out, though, because. Yeah, but any time he steps up to Voldemort, if he finds the way into Voldemort's lair, wherever or whatever that might be, and is actually standing with all Horcruxes destroyed, waiting to kill Voldemort, I really don't think he's going to get soft and say, oh, you know, you're a nice guy, let's be friends. Because, I mean, look at how many people, Dumbledore's Sirius are all dead, his parents, everybody, the whole world is in ruins, billions of people died at the hand of Voldemort. Yeah, Voldemort was, what, you know, an orphan. So what? So was Harry. Harry had a bad life. He dealt with it.
What do you guys think about the series going full circle? Harry comes face to face with Voldemort. Voldemort says, Harry says, I just can't do this. Turns his back. Voldemort casts a spell. It rebounds again. Bam.
Kills him that time.
Yeah.
Kills himself.
Yeah,
no, I actually like that idea. Kind of like, you weak, pathetic fool, and then he, you know, Avada Kedavra, and then he blows it back.
Wouldn't
on
that
himself,
be a very anticlimactic?
Definitely. Yeah. Without,
yeah. If yeah. I even finish saying the word climactic, but I think what's going to drive Harry is his parents and Dumbledore, both
and Sirius,
yeah,
and pretty much the whole wizard.
Yeah, but Voldemort didn't kill Sirius, and he didn't kill Dumbledore.
Voldemort...
No, but it was because
of Voldemort planted the image that Sirius was, you know, trapped in the ministry. Voldemort did it all.
Yeah, right. He caused
it all. Voldemort was behind everything. Without Voldemort, none of that would happen.
The bigger question, though, is not is Harry going to want to, but can Harry actually do it? I don't think he can cast Avada Kedavra.
Why okay, not? But if we're going to assume...
It takes more than sheer hatred as... Bellatrix said.
Was not even just hatred, it's the helplessness. Harry's helpless because of the loss of all of his people. That I think if he concentrated on all the people that were killed, you know, who were close to him at the hand of Voldemort, he could cast Avada Kedavra. Not only that, but if we're going to assume that he can actually destroy Voldemort's Horcruxes, we should believe that he can kill Voldemort.
Yeah. Especially going through all of that. And maybe,
That's different. Removing the piece of soul from an inanimate object is different than killing a person.
Yeah, I know, but a lot of inanimate objects have the benefit that Voldemort does not, which is that they can be stowed away in a secret area. Voldemort's always active, and as a result of that, you always can find him if you look hard enough or for long enough.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it's a lot different when you kill a person because you're actually taking the life out of someone.
That's true, but going to find all the Horcruxes is going to take a lot of work. So, I mean, the whole time he's searching for those Horcruxes, he's going to intend to kill Voldemort. And once he gets to that moment, yes, I agree that he might have a hard time looking Voldemort into the eyes and actually casting Avada Kedavra on him.
Well, he can't. He has to kill him some other way because of priori incantatum.
We don't know what's up with Ollivander, though.
Yeah, but what can Ollivander do about that? Yeah.
You know, we talked last week about the fact that Harry's blood's running through Voldemort. Do you think that's going to weaken him anyway?
There has to be something with it. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be something that it's.
And let's not forget, Pettigrew still owes a life debt.
Yep.
To
well, I think J.K. Rowling said in the interview with Emerson and Melissa that. When Dumbledore has the gleam of triumph in his eye, that is enormously significant. And we all know that he got the gleam of triumph when Harry told him that Voldemort used his blood. So that's definitely, to me, that's how he's gonna. That has something to do with that.
Something, yeah, it's pivotal. Yeah,
you kind of get the idea that even though he can touch Harry now, skin to skin contact, fandom, fanfic. Writers everywhere rejoice, but it might actually pack a more powerful punch as a result of that.
That and
like, oh, by the way, heir of Slytherin, you have Gryffindor blood in you, or something like that.
Or maybe something with love. Well, Harry. Has
oh yeah. Well,
love
the fact that that's a good point, Ben, because. Harry's so, you know, receptive of love. Harry's blood should act like acid in Voldemort's veins, but it didn't so far. So I don't know.
I know the way it's set up. It seems like Harry's just gonna say "I love you" to Voldemort, and he's gonna He's going to collapse.
No, I cannot be loved.
Wouldn't that be weird, though? Like, if he like...
Sent him a Valentine?
No, not just that, but he found a way to give... This is going to sound weird. It found a way to give Voldemort love, and that just killed him.
Eric's right.
Give me some loving.
Fanfic writers everywhere do rejoice.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, something else I think we need to talk about is, do you think if Voldemort gets killed, okay, by Harry, would that make him a martyr of his people?
In the Death Eater's eyes, maybe.
Would they rally around it, though?
No, I don't think so. I think
nobody's cruel and as evil.
And he's holding them together.
They're just followers.
I mean, yeah. Without him, they're nothing. So once,
yeah, they're just followers. There's no leaders.
So once he gets knocked off, they're going to fall apart.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin's right. I mean, people like Bellatrix, whereas they might possess some leadership skills, they're not currently in themselves powerful enough to get away from the Ministry and any powerful witch or wizard, actually. Voldemort was the big lapse jump in power, just as Dumbledore was for the good people, and
but the good people are still able to manage. The Death Eaters, I really think Harry's going to have to live with that. Once he kills Voldemort, he's going to have to always have that breathing down his back. The fact that the Death Eaters could possibly regroup and kill him.
Well, that's why he wanted to be an Auror. So that he could continue fighting dark wizards, because that's kind of his thing. I mean, he obviously had to see himself doing that after Voldemort, in a post-Voldemort situation, because otherwise he wouldn't be going after Death Eaters, he'd be going after Voldemort, the big cheese himself.
Do you think that would change his mind on becoming one? Like, say, once he kills Voldemort, he's really going to want to... I think we talked about this.
I think he's going to write a book, and then...
Write a book.
He's going to write a book, and...
Harry Potter is what will happen in... Future.
What has happened in the first yeah. in my life? Who lived? Who died?
Harry Potter.
Who fell in love?
Be on Oprah's book club. It'll be huge. Yeah, I personally think the Death Eaters could regroup and attempt to kill Harry. Attempt to kill close friends of Harry.
The thing is, they fell apart halftime, though. They fell apart the time before.
They did. The time before, they fell apart. Some of them were in jail. Some of them were like, "Oh, I was cursed." You know,
well,
very few of them managed. Well, Lucius Malfoy, very few managed to actually keep any strands of any social life at all. And the thing is, too,
even Draco.
If you want to look at,
I mean, Draco's got his own group of like mini Death Eaters with Crabbe and Goyle.
It's true.
So.
It's true. If they really were determined enough, but I think that's the mindset of the follower. The Death Eaters are followers. They're not leaders, as I just said. Now, that's where the Nazism comes in, because you got to understand, Voldemort begrudged these people. He uses fear to control them into getting them to be Death Eaters. Mm-hmm. So,
Draco,
you know,
could too.
You might say, yeah. So this person might hate Muggles for no reason. I mean, Voldemort's just directing all their anger and fears. There's nothing genuine about their anger and fears. I mean, there might be a little bit, but not enough to actually make them. Like, Voldemort's the evil one. Nobody else is that genuinely evil, except maybe Bellatrix, because she's crazy. But, like, so, you know, I don't think they'd stay together enough to form some kind of faction that would be anything worthwhile to give anybody any trouble, because none of them are Voldemort.
But who's to say these people aren't going to die themselves?
That's true. I think a few of them will die in the book.
Oh, Death Eaters,
everyone's
definitely.
Always talking about
the bigwigs too. See, yeah. Like if say Bellatrix dies, say who else? Pettigrew dies. Not that he would be able to regroup.
Lucius is going down.
Yeah, and Draco. Hopefully at the same time. Okay. Well, should we? So, I mean, did this stem from? Does Voldemort deserve to die?
Yeah.
Okay. Should we make that the poll on the site this week?
Well, it's already on MuggleNet, I think.
Oh, is it? Oh, well, let's look at the results. Currently on MuggleNet, 48% of the people answering the question, should Voldemort die, respond yes, because to him, there is nothing worse than death. 20% say no, because Dumbledore says there are worse things than death. Make him clean toilets as a Muggle janitor. Oh, Emerson. And then 31% say, I don't know, but whatever happens to him, he'd better be miserable.
That's where the Muggle janitor thing came in.
Interesting. So vote on the MuggleNet.com poll, and if those results are very skewed next week, we'll know it was because of our discussion. Moving along now, last week we talked about some things that J.K. Rowling has said concerning the seventh book, and now we have a few more for everyone. We are going to start off with one that was in the Emerson and Melissa interview back from July of 2005. Melissa asked Joe, are we going to see more of Umbridge? And Joe nods. Joe nods, and then Melissa says, you say that with an evil nod. And Joe says, yeah, it's just too much fun to torture her not to have another little bit more before I finish. So, what do you guys think could happen in Book 7 with Umbridge? Maybe she's going to perhaps try to get involved or get in the way of what Harry's trying to do again, and Harry's just going to completely cast some nasty spell on her. Any ideas?
I don't think she'll try and hinder Harry, especially because the Ministry has sort of changed their view towards him.
Well, they've had to. She's
Half-Blood
been
Prince.
I think the Ministry changed their view, but you know, not
Joe much. Says she wants to have a little bit more fun torturing her. So does that mean that Umbridge is going to try to do some things?
That's what I would
not be successful, yeah, and end up in the forest again.
Well, that's maybe not so much the forest, but I was thinking that maybe she would just try to intervene, because what else is going to get her tortured?
Yeah,
because she says, well, not to have a little.
I would like
more
to see Umbridge held accountable for sending the Death Eaters in the first place, because that was just some mean bit of nastiness.
Dementors,
yeah. Not Death Eaters.
What did I say?
Not Death Eaters.
Oh, Dementors. I'm slipping with the D's. I apologize.
Yeah, why did she get in trouble for that? That's a pretty big deal.
Well, nobody knows. The only people who knew were in that room when she, you know, admitted to that, and they're all students, and nobody would. I mean, I don't. Did
the Ministry,
you know,
was
the
probably
whole
trying to hide it.
Did yeah, and Harry probably wouldn't have said that in his interview either with Rita about how how it was Umbridge who sent the Dementors. So I guess nobody knows. But I would like to see her held accountable for that, because that was just absolutely insane. Who holds a grudge that much? I mean, she's like, all the other Ministry people were doing nothing about it. I did something. So she acted of her own accord, and she's just going crazy. So she's going to... I don't think it's unlikely she'll get herself in trouble again.
Could she be evil, though? I mean,
I don't
could
see
she
her
join
joining
the,
Death Eaters?
Death Eaters?
Myself, I mean... I think she's too full of herself to...
Yeah, she's just a little bit of a dictator type thing.
Another part of the J.K. Rowling interview, Joe says, there's a theory this applies to detective novels, and then Harry, which is not really a detective novel, but it feels like one sometimes, that you should not have romantic intrigue in a detective book. Dorothy L. Sayers, who is a queen of the genre, said, and then broke her own rule, but she said that there is no place for romance in a detective story except that it can be useful to camouflage other people's motives. That's true. It is a very useful trick. I've used that on Percy, and I've used that to a degree on Tonks in this book, as a red herring. But having said that, I disagree, in as much as mine are very character-driven books, and it's so important, therefore, that we see these characters fall in love, which is a necessary part of life. So, Micah, what do you make of this?
That Harry Potter is in James Bond, so we don't have to worry about some woman who's trying to deceive him. I mean, I think that's what she was trying to say. And, you know, she's used sort of relationships in the series as she's seen fit. And they're not going to play a big part in the seventh book. They were there for book six, and it was part of maturity, I think.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're writing about people. You should write about how they interact. It is a character-driven book, what Joe said about it's important to see these characters fall in love is a necessary part in life and stuff. But I think, yeah, I think Mike is right in thinking that book six was the major hub of it. I mean, you know, everybody's going to have to celebrate after Voldemort's dead, maybe with Harry, maybe without Harry, you know, whatever. But beyond that, I mean, there is Bill and Fleur's wedding.
I was just
going
to say, you're going to have the ultimate romance in book seven.
It's true. It's true. It's true. So you're going to get, you know, people will love, people will fall, people will martyr, people will... Might be crazy. You're right.
And who's going to catch the flower bouquet? You know what I'm saying?
Well, didn't you write about that in MuggleNet.com? So what will happen in Harry Potter book seven?
No, we did not write about that in MuggleNet.com.
Then you should write a sequel.
What will happen in Harry Potter book seven?
You should do a sequel. Who will catch the bouquet?
Who lives, who dies, and who will catch the bouquet?
Yeah.
Ben, get on that. Yeah, I won 25% for the title.
I'm all over that.
That's good. That's good. Any other ideas? Kevin, you got any speculation? how much romance there's going to be in book 7. Does anyone care?
I don't think it's a main focus in the book. So, yeah, it's like, next, move on.
Yeah, all right. Well, there's another interview with JKR, and someone asked her, one of our internet correspondents wondered if Snape is going to fall in love. And J.K. Rowling says, yeah, who on earth would want Snape in love with them? This is a very horrible idea. And then the person who's asking the question responds, but you'd get an important kind of redemptive pattern to Snape. And J.K. Rowling says, it is, isn't it? There's so much I wish I could say to you, and I can't because it'd ruin, I'd promise you, whoever asked that question, can I just say to you that I'm slightly stunned that you've said that. And you'll find out why I'm so stunned if you read book 7, and that's all I'm going to say. That is very interesting to me, and this was back in 1999. And, you know, it's all these early quotes that have the most interesting information, if you ask me. So it leads me to think that she just wasn't as secret. I mean, if someone asked her that question now, what would she respond? I don't think she would say, look for it, you'll find out in book 7 why you just brought up Snape falling in love, or someone falling in love with Snape.
Well, the thing is, too, there's more to that here. It looks like it's continuous, the following thing we have in the schedule about JKR, because she says, in book 3, you're absolutely right, you find out a lot about Harry's father. Now, the important thing about Harry's mother, the really, really significant thing, you're going to find out in two parts. You'll find out a lot more about her in book 5, or you'll find out something very significant about her in book 5, and you'll find out something incredibly important about her in book 7. But I can't tell you what those things are, I'm sorry, but yes, you will find out more about her, because both of them are very important in what Harry ends up having to do, end quote. That worries me. No, I think it blends, and it worries me because of the Snape-Lily love thing, triangle.
Why does that worry you?
Because about it being canon. You know, there's like, if Snape wasn't... Because like, Lily, where on one hand she thought Snape... Because it makes me uncomfortable because of what we found out about
yeah,
James.
Yeah, I think they're separate, but that's okay.
In book 5, to Snape, and being very arrogant, and it worried Harry. Like, all that stuff was there for a reason, but... We don't know. I just don't know what it means. What can possibly be coming about Lily? That she loves Snape, or that she had a relationship, or, you know, what's...
Do we just skip over the Snape thing?
No, Eric thought this was...
Well, this is about Snape falling in love. The other one was about Snape falling in love, so...
Well, no, I think the other thing that he added is important, was that he was wondering, would you kind of get a redemptive pattern to Snape? And then J.K. Rowling says... She said she was stunned that he said that, and that you'd find out why in book 7. Now, if she's stunned in a way that she couldn't believe he actually said that, in this most ridiculous thing she's ever heard,
no.
Or she's stunned because he may actually be right, and Snape will be redeemed in book 7.
Well, I don't think it was about the redemption, but she did say, slightly stunned you've said that, but yeah, one of them, you're absolutely right. You find out a lot about... I don't know. Who would want Snape in love with him? That's a horrible idea. And then when he says about the redemptive pattern, she says, you know, whoever asked that question, I'm slightly stunned. You'll find out why if you read book 7. So it's like, was Snape in love is really the question he asked. The redemptive pattern was just what he used to justify if Snape is going to fall in love or somebody's going to be in love with Snape.
Well, my thing was, is she stunned because he's correct?
Or stunned because it's absolutely...
Or is she stunned because she knows that he's evil and there's no way that he could ever have any type of relationship or be redeemed?
I think it's because of how close he was.
Yeah, because the misdemeanor in which J.K. answers all her questions, she doesn't consider any question to be stupid. She might say, yeah, you know, I don't really think that character is kind of, you know, really like that or anything like that. But she wouldn't say, oh my god, in love with Snape, let me go gag. Oh my gosh, you suggested Snape would be in, you know, because that's an insult to the person who asked the question.
So you guys are thinking that in book 7 it's going to come out that Snape was in love with Lily, or perhaps vice versa? Because when I read this, what I immediately assumed was that Snape was going to fall in love in book 7.
Who?
I don't know, but...
Maybe with Harry.
Well, okay. Back in 1999, Joe was set on the fact that we're going to find out about love involving Snape in book 7. So, it must be a big part of the plot. Right? If you're going to know 7 years beforehand, this is going to be in book 7?
Yeah, he's right.
it's on a little fact that you could throw in at a later point. So, with that said, I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's room in Book 7 for Snape to fall in love, and it certainly doesn't seem like there's anyone to fall in love with.
And I think if he was in love previously, it was definitely a one-way thing.
No, Micah. There's someone out there for everyone. There's plenty of fish in the sea.
There is someone out there for everyone.
I mean, you know, God, Ben, love, it's really not the easy thing.
The only baggage you can bring.
Yep.
It's all that you can't leave behind.
But what about the Lily thing, though? I don't remember ever learning anything about her in Book 5.
I'm still guaranteed it's going to be obvious.
Well, the only time we saw her in Book 5 was in the past. If I remember correctly, the only time we heard about Lily was in the past when we found out that she really hated James, or hated James picking on Snape.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, that's what we really...
So you're saying the big thing could be that she had a soft spot for him.
Well, not necessarily a soft spot, but that she didn't like James enough so that Harry, you know, was forced to risk going into the fire to ask Lupin and Sirius about it. Because she really, you know, was very upset with him. I actually have a fan art depiction by a woman named V of this sitting next to me in a frame about Lily coming up to James with this utmost look of revulsion and because of what he just did to Snape. So, I mean, that's what we found out about. I mean, that's the only time I remember about Lily in Book 5.
How does that relate to what Harry's going to end up having to do, which is what
I don't know. That's the question. I mean, but she said you find out about Lily in two parts, in one in Book 5 and one in Book 7. But I was under the impression she also said we find out about her in Book 6, and everybody was questioning, well, was she just good at potions? I mean, what did we learn in Book 6 either? This whole Lily thing is amazingly
confusing,
subtle, and confusing. It's bad.
Do you think it could involve? It's either going to involve Lily's eyes or Snape.
And the Lily's eyes thing, we don't know what that has to do with either.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So maybe that could be the big revelation. I think that has more significance than her being in love with Snape, unless maybe it played a role in, you know, Godric's Hollow or something. I don't know.
Well, Snape. Some people say that's why Snape begged Voldemort to pardon Lily because he was in love with her.
Ah, right.
There's that possibility.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah. Okay, and then one last thing we're going to talk about here, something Alfonso Cuarón, the director of the Prisoner of Azkaban film, said. We needed a place where the kids could see the execution of Buckbeak, and we thought about having a graveyard, and we consulted Jo about it, and she said, no, the graveyard is not there. And I said, why? And then she gave me the whole explanation of why the graveyard cannot be there, because it's in a different place of the castle, because it's going to play, ... and she knows her thing. She knows exactly what's going to happen later. So, I don't know. I mean, Book 4 came out, that was 2001, right? Yeah. Okay, so that doesn't have anything to do with it.
Book 4 came out in 2000, actually.
Book 4 came out in 2003. I know. Yeah, Book 4...
2000.
2000.
So the point is not... It's actually subtle here because it's to be confused. See, Book 4 was already out, so Alfonso wouldn't have voiced his concern if he didn't... I mean, he already knew about the fact that something happens in a graveyard, but he's talking specifically about a graveyard castle.
On a Hogwarts grass, right.
On a Hogwarts grass, right. So he said that... She said that the graveyard is somewhere else in the castle.
Did she say that in so many words?
Well, I don't know. This could be Alfonso's take on it. Right. But because it's in a different place of the castle is what... That's why this quote is... I mean, I just can't believe that he wanted to put a freaking graveyard... to kill Buckbeak. It's bad enough he arranged the whole freaking movie, right, differently, and cuts out the major subplots. He wants to kill Buckbeak in a graveyard?
Well,
he died in the pumpkin patch, in the back of Hagrid's house.
He wants to be different.
How could you change that? Let's make a graveyard here. Maybe some more shrunken heads can be on the tombstones. What? I apologize. I'm going to control myself. I said I've refined my views.
He wanted it to be a different... you know, view. I don't know if it's that New Zealand Air getting to you or what, but just
I got to say, though, New Zealand Air is very, very clean.
Is it?
I can breathe. I'm breathing, and it's just...
As opposed to not breathing. You weren't breathing.
Yeah, right. No, it's true, and everybody I tell that to, I say, okay, it's not smoggy in Pennsylvania. It's
try
just a matter...
Can you scoop me a bottle of the air and mail it back here, and
I'll
breathe
it? Yeah,
you want
me to?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, okay.
What? So, do you think maybe it could have something to do with Dumbledore's burial?
That's what I thought. That's the connection I made because we saw the funeral right at the end of book six, but we don't know. I was in Dumbledore's tomb was not in the graveyard at the funeral. Like the whole, I would call
it
sarcophagus.
We had that whole discussion, but we came to the conclusion that it was there.
That it was in a graveyard?
No, that his tomb was actually there. Weren't we talking about Dumbledore not actually being in the tomb? Never mind. Go ahead, Micah.
No, I was going to say, could the Founders be buried there somewhere?
Like, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, there's got to be like, some place of remembrance.
Past headmasters.
Yeah, because it's not like no past headmaster had a body to bury. I mean,
right.
That's what's questionable, because it's not like, at Dumbledore's funeral, it's not saying it's in this graveyard where all the other, you know, people were buried. Where Dumbledore's tomb was at his funeral was out on grounds that were open enough for all the people to come and see and to sit and have room. So, I'm wondering if Dumbledore's tomb will be moved from where it was at rest for his funeral to the graveyard, this presumable alleged graveyard on the school grounds.
But this also means that we're going to have to see it, too.
Well, right.
So...
And so is Harry going back to Hogwarts.
Oh.
To see the graveyard,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. I mean, then again, we're trusting what Alfonso said. He could have been paraphrasing what Joe was actually saying.
It's true. He could have gotten an incorrect impression.
But it wouldn't have went. It wouldn't have went on the DVD if J.K. Rowling didn't want it to. I'm sure she reviewed it.
Maybe. But you know what? I think it would be cool if to find Ravenclaw's Horcrux, you got to follow a complex series of clues based on the graveyard and the tombstones and the shape of things. But that's the little Da Vinci Code, I guess.
Okay. Well, I think that wraps up that discussion. Maybe we'll get some more quotes next week. We'll do a 3-part series. That sounds like fun, right? Right?
Ooh, 3 parts. Yay.
We have a few more emails now. The first one is from Lana, 14 of Nebraska. She writes, "Hey guys, and Laura, in J.K. Rowling's dream about Harry Potter, she said she/Harry was trying to find a Horcrux in a long hall that wasn't the Great Hall. Do you think this could have been in the hall in the orphanage Voldemort grew up in, or in the old Riddle House where Tom Riddle Sr. lived? I love the show, Laura, Micah. You guys are my favorites, but I love you all. P.S. Andrew, you're the best. You're better than Lauren, Mike.
Yeah, minus the PS.
I don't see that there.
Well, it was in a separate email to me.
Oh, okay.
So, I don't know. I think when Harry or when J.K. Rowling is having these dreams, when you dream, don't you mash your thoughts together?
Yeah, we talked about this.
Yeah, she could have been upset about, I don't know, the paper boy could have thrown and broken a window or something, and that could have affected the dream. You know. No, I'm serious. If she's talking about lots of windows. Do we even know? I mean, I want to trust JK on this, but who has dreams like this, honestly? Like, I mean, she made this big deal that she was actually having dreams.
Because
we were talking about how, wow, it really must be affecting
Harry.
Her.
Yeah.
But that's so weird. Why would she be having a dream? Like, I almost don't want to trust that she, like, had this dream because it's so weird about Horcruxes and...
Well, she's not making
There's
it up.
No way we can possibly analyze it because, yeah, but she knows, she not only knows what Horcruxes are used for and all about them, but what they could have been used for as well, like when she was trying to decide what was going to happen. So she's got like so many, I want to say, alternate Harry Potter realities in her mind just from what she could have done or was going to do originally and didn't. That, how do we even judge how that relates to anything? I mean, she put it on her site, so it's got to be...
That's
I was going to say. It's on the site, and she's very selective about what she tells the fans. So I doubt it's just something that's irrelevant.
We have another email now, Trisha 20 of Canada, North Bay, Ontario, Canada. She writes, I just wanted to add something to your segment on Dumbledore's gleam of triumph from the 73rd MuggleCast. I think the reason Dumbledore had a gleam of triumph is because he knows that Harry's blood will make Voldemort continuously weaker. Think about it. Harry has so much love running through his veins, and Voldemort can't have that. Even when he possessed Harry for a minute at the Ministry, it caused him pain for that short period of time. Don't you think that having Harry's blood in his veins would continuously make him weaker? In my opinion, that's why Dumbledore had a gleam of triumph. Harry has already made it easier to defeat Voldemort, and it's all his fault. Thanks for doing the podcast. I love them. I like that, Trisha.
We just said that on this episode, too. We came to that conclusion about Harry's blood being, you know, acid to Voldemort's veins. But the concern is that it hasn't hurt him so far. But, I mean, the fact is, the whole blood of the enemy thing, Voldemort did that so that he could touch Harry's skin, but, again, you know, it hasn't really... It could have a bad side to it.
We're fairly sure that it's going to make him weaker in some way. I mean, it's a decent theory. It's just... It's such... You know... You can come up with
There's
any
so many possibilities.
Number of explanations to how it's going to make him weaker, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, though, that there were already a little bit of similarities between Harry and Voldemort, and then Voldemort had to go and make that other one. Like, make another one, forge another one. It wasn't really a smart idea. That just kind of fits Voldemort's personality.
Yeah,
he wanted to be able to touch Harry so that he could do physical harm to him, not thinking about the repercussions of what his soul or body might feel.
Yeah. Caitlin, 15 of Philadelphia, has another idea about the gleam of triumph. She writes, after hearing your discussion about the gleam in Dumbledore's eyes, I started thinking about life debts. Harry, in a way, saved Voldemort's life when his blood was used to restore him to his previous self. Could the gleam of triumph be because now Voldemort is indebted to Harry?
I don't think so. Because
why not, Kevin?
He didn't really save his life.
He sort of did. He needed Harry's blood.
He created a body for him, but he didn't save his life by any means.
He didn't willingly do it. I think that's something. You know, he willingly saved Pettigrew. He didn't willingly offer his
right.
blood to Voldemort.
That's another thing as well, yeah.
But that's not to say, I mean, that's what we were saying. I mean, if the blood has other problems that are going to cause problems for Voldemort,
yeah, I think
you don't
that's
need
what it is.
Debt.
I don't think it's a debt, though. Yeah. I don't think, you know.
It's not a life
right.
debt because Harry didn't willingly say, okay, here, have this. I know just the thing, just the ingredient that will make this recipe perfecto.
Elena Bryant, 19 of Knoxville, Tennessee, writes about Voldemort and the Brother Wands question that Laura brought up last week. Laura was asking why Brother Wands can't fight each other and what might happen now that Voldemort has Harry's blood running through his veins in MuggleCast 73. Maybe since Voldemort is alive because of Harry's life-giving blood running through his veins, Voldemort cannot kill Harry without killing himself. If Harry dies, could the blood in Voldemort's veins die as well and kill Voldemort in the process? Well, if you're thinking realistically, like if someone donates blood and then they die, the person who received the blood isn't dead. What did Harry's blood
okay,
have
it's interesting.
In it?
What does Harry's blood have in it, or does Voldemort have Harry's specific blood? Like does Voldemort have Harry's like say DNA?
Type H.
Yeah, he has all the
genetic. Exactly. If it's
the genetic
all the genetic connotations like in their abnormalities. But if Harry's like O negative, is Voldemort now O negative, or like if Voldemort cuts himself falling onto a skylet breaking into a house, will Harry get framed for it? You know, exactly how close is their blood? I mean, and does it have something where if Harry dies, Voldemort's going to die? I think that's cool.
Do wizards and witches have a completely different blood? Like,
no, they're humans. I mean...
Yeah, they are
human.
They're
human, but why wasn't it a problem if, like, you know, say Harry was type A and Voldemort was type O, positive, or whatever?
Because it's magic.
Well, exactly.
The things many people do is many of these series... And especially, like, even with the Underworld series, there's, like, a gene and a genetic, like, the magic gene or something like that that some people have, like... But what we found out is that things with, like, squibs and other things about... You know, there's no way to predict it.
Now that I think about it, though, have you guys donated blood before? And I told this story on the show before. You know, I couldn't because I went to England. There's actually a spot that said if you were a wizard or a witch, you couldn't donate either. That might explain it.
That's part of the exclusion criteria.
Yes, exactly.
But actually, going off what you said, I mean, that's kind of a question comparing it to us. Like, if I donated blood, or somebody donates blood and they die, does that mean the person they gave the blood to is going to die?
Oh, well, you know, obviously, I mean? Not.
Yeah, but I think the reason why they're creating this scenario is that it's not as easy as just you giving blood to someone, because his body was created out of that blood. So is that body now bringing on traits of Harry, essentially?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
Which, I mean, it sort of makes sense.
One of Harry's traits is to love, that he inherited from his mother, isn't it? So, and Voldemort's not really showing any signs of love. So,
but does the body love soul. Or does the soul love?
I think everybody loves.
Everybody loves somebody sometime.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Eric, I got a crackpot theory for you this week.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Been wanting one of these.
This comes from Mabel, 16 of Sydney.
Hello,
she's
Mabel,
close.
If you're able.
She says, although I think this is completely insane, it'd be cool to hear Eric defending this. Okay, are you ready for your crackpot theory of the week?
I am.
Argus Filch is a spy in Hogwarts. Go.
In Hogwarts what? A spy
Argus
in
Filch
Hogwarts?
Is a spy in Hogwarts. Stop wasting time. Go.
No. Okay, you said he's a spy on Hogwarts.
In Hogwarts.
I thought you were saying... In Hogwarts?
Yes.
For
in
who?
Hogwarts.
Or well, just a spy in Hogwarts?
Yes. Yeah, it just...
Okay,
just a
well,
spy.
Okay.
A spy.
Part of the
in Hogwarts.
He's a spy. Well,
I would assume
yeah.
for Voldemort, yeah. because a spy wouldn't be spying for themselves.
Well, I think Argus would. You know, he has Mrs. Norris, who's stationed all over the school. If somebody, you know, does something, either Mrs. Norris or Filch knows about it. This isn't just about troublemakers, but Filch seems to always want to know what's going on, whether it be what the Weasley twins are doing for mischief. But, you know, I really don't know. He's got some really crazy practices about dungeons and hanging kids by shackles and stuff. But my main concern is that he does know all of the Hogwarts passageways, except for, you know, a few that might be on the Marauder's map or Fred and George might have known. But he knows all the passageways. He can get from any point in the castle to another. And he can pretty much see what's going on, second to Dumbledore, I would say. In the castle. He put himself in the position as caretaker of the castle to know all that information. So it's actually quite difficult if Voldemort were to want to say, okay, what's the best way to get into the trophy room? You know, Filch could probably lead him there. Or lead anybody there.
She actually proved a couple points on, like, Snape being a spy and also Mrs. Fig being a spy. Her arguments were Filch, like Mrs. Fig, is a squib, and like Fig, was looking over Harry. Could be looking after Draco. Number two was Filch is somewhat friendly with Snape, and if Snape is evil, this would fit perfectly. Number three, it is mentioned that besides the Weasley twins, he knows the school better than anyone else. And number four, Fig has cats, as does Filch, so maybe there's some sort of connection there. Good, Eric. Well,
yeah, squibs and cats. I guess the cats are kind of their connection to the magical world, too, because cats are kind of magical, and, yeah.
Let's wrap this week up with a chicken soup for the Muggle Castle. Hey, Muggle Casters, I've got a chronic lung condition that makes it very difficult to breathe, and I spend a lot of time in and out of the hospital. Up until last year, my time there was spent going crazy with nothing to do. Luckily, I discovered MuggleCast, and that's all changed. I listen to every show over and over again while I'm in the hospital, and time seems to fly. You are all so hilarious. My nurses are so confused when they come to draw blood, and I'm cracking up. You guys can make me laugh even when I can barely breathe. I was in the hospital again this week, and you guys made it so much better. Thanks so much for improving the quality of my life. I love MuggleCast. Annie from Chicago.
Thank you, Annie, so much. That was very kind of you. We've been getting a lot of chicken soups lately from people all over the world, and we enjoy reading them, and we usually pick one a week here. So if you're interested, if you'd like to submit your chicken soup for the MuggleCast, so how MuggleCast has affected, improved, ruined... destroyed
your life.
Changed your life, yeah. Emails, mugglecast@staff.mugglenet.com. We're going to wrap up today's show with a P.O. Box update from Ben Shane.
Okay, folks. Something interesting. Mugglecast is now a member of PETA. Someone signed us
what?
Up, and I got a little membership thing in the P.O. Box. For those of you who don't know, PETA is the pet liberation organization, animal rights activists. So we got a bunch of stickers also. A few, these say, speciesism sucks. And then this one, these say, pigs are friends, not food, and has a picture of a pig on it. So cute. And then these last ones say, cut class, not frogs. Don't dissect. And has a picture of a frog. So I thought that was kind of funny. So, yeah, email in if you signed us up for PETA, because that's awesome. Hey, thanks to Katie Schneider, who wrote us a nice little letter and included a big, another box of books. She, if you remember a few months ago, she sent us like a big box of books, and now she sent another one for Christmas. So thanks to Katie. Katie is from Maryland, so thank you for sending those in. I got a card here from, who is this from? Sunny Christian, who sent in a Quiznos gift card for me. Let's see here. Oh, we have a big stack of Christmas cards. I'll be getting those out to the rest of the MuggleCasters this week. Katie Farrell sent one for each of us. Jay Myers, Jessica and Simone Stock, Judy Chapin, Jay Ritter, someone from Canada, Proma Kosla, Alicia Brokemeyer, Megan Townsend, and one, I came across a postcard in the stack of mail from someone clear from the Czech Republic, which is, I think, is pretty
neat. Wow.
It says, ahoy, ahoy, I don't know how to say it, ahoy from Prague,
Prague,
Jamie.
How about Prague, which is
Prague,
in the Czech Republic?
Jamie,
Prague,
today
yeah,
we listen,
that's it.
Prague. Ahoy from Prague, MuggleCasters. Jamie, today we listen to, okay, Dan's tune sang really loud every time we touch, partly as a tribute, but mostly because we love it too. Then from Nashlandu, sorry, email and how to pronounce your name correctly. Oh, I think that's Czech. I don't know. Her name's Leah, by the way. Sorry, that's not her name. Leah is her name, and she's from all her Czech friends. She sent this postcard is clear from the Czech Republic. Then, let me pop this open real quick. Someone sent every MuggleCaster a Subway gift card. Thank you, Pammy.
Ooh, nice. Thank you,
Pammy, for sending us each a Subway gift card. How nice of you.
There are Subways in New Zealand, so I do expect to
really?
Get that card, Ben.
Wow.
Yes, there are.
We can't
crazy.
Afford that kind of international.
Oh, the international postage? How do you send Jamie his stuff, or don't you? You just wait till he shows up.
No, we just don't.
We don't.
And also, thanks to Kelda Sweeney. For sending
who's that?
A Christmas card for each of us.
Oh, that's cool.
Who's
well,
that?
Christmas.
I want to know who signed us up for PETA. Yeah, so thanks to everyone who sent us stuff. I have a big stack of mail here, so.
Real quick, we're just kidding when we say we don't mail the stuff to Jamie. So.
Yeah, by the way, we're just kidding when we say I don't mail people stuff.
Ben, what is the P.O. Box address?
That is P.O. Box 223, Mound Ridge, Kansas, 67107.
Don't forget, there are also many other ways to contact us. Like if you're in the United States, you can call the MuggleCast voicemail to leave a comment or question. Just dial 1-218-20-MAGIC on your telephone. If you're in Australia, we got a handy number for you, 02-803-5668. Eric, can you call that locally?
It's not local, but I can call it.
Yeah, if you're in the United Kingdom, you can dial 020-8144-0677. You can also Skype the username MuggleCast. Just remember to keep your question under 30 seconds and eliminate as much background noise as possible. And on MuggleCast.com, you can also find a handy feedback form to contact any one of us, or just email our first name at staff.mugglenet.com. Also, a quick update on our Deathly Hallows Theory contest. All of you better get your entries in soon, because the deadline is...
Is that to win a piece of Jamie's suitcase?
Yeah. Because the deadline is February 4th, so you want to get those in as soon as possible if you want a piece of Jamie's suitcase. Also, don't forget to visit all of our community outlets. There's MySpace, Facebook, YouTube, Frapper, Last of Them, even the fan listing forums. You can also dig us on dig.com and vote for us once a month on Podcast Alley and rate and review us on Yahoo Podcasts. We want to get the word out about the show, and the best way to do that is through you guys. So we thank you very much
for your
support. Tell all your friends. All right, so that wraps up today's show. Once again, I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Ben Shane.
I'm Kevin Steck.
I'm Eric Skull.
And I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
We thank everyone for listening, and we'll see everyone next week for episode 75. Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Or.
Bye. Bye.
Say Snape dies. Actually, Lucius, didn't we just hear that Lucius was not going to be in Book 7?
What?
That was Jason Isaacs
saying, I hope he makes it through, or something like that.
Yeah, but I thought he was told by J.K. wasn't in Book 7 at all.
Don't even start that.
No, he didn't say that. I hope you're kidding. Why would he reveal that?
Well, because he's stuck in prison.
So? Well, he might... Well, maybe
he's out of prison now, isn't he?
I thought he was in prison. He didn't escape.
I thought they all broke out at the end of Half-Blood
Prince. Yeah, they
left
Lucius there to rot, didn't they?
Oh, did they? I don't know.
Is Eric with his other theories?
Yeah, better. Yeah, but either way, no. Jason Isaacs did not hear from Joe that he was going to die.
He did say July.
No, not die. But no, I heard he wasn't going to be in Book 7 though. I thought. No, seriously. Okay, Ben, stop freaking out. I'm going to Muggle.net right now. I'm going to check that out.
He didn't say that. Oh my gosh. No,
I thought he said that he wasn't going to be in Book 7, and he really wanted to be in Book 7.
No, he wanted to make sure his character got enough
airtime.
Scenes in Book 7. Yeah.
Well, what does that have to do with anything, scenes in Book 7?
He was joking that he wants to be in the 7th film.
So he can play the part
film.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How can I search for news topics?
Let's move along here. Is there anything else to talk in this discussion, Ben?
I think that's it, but...